is Michelle, sharp as a scalpel. "Yoga binds us," she says, looking around the bright faces. "But we share much more than the desire for fit bodies." When they moved across 3 years ago for Alistair's career, Michelle says it was a wrench to leave her tribe behind. Some of them will follow her to Belfast because they miss her holistic approach. Erin thinks about Alistair's words, a no-nonsense kind of woman. He must have noticed that the first time she was under his care. She was one of his first patients in Belfast and was ambitious, her rise up the management ladder underway. She doesn't want to let her team know she might be ill, or at least not until she's sure. She's normally on the same side as Dr. McAvoy, giving unwelcome advice to her heart patients.
"Your cancer's back," Alistair says. "I thought we'd get 5 years, but it's an aggressive bugger."
Already, the male language of fighting. He brings the mammograms up on his computer and turns the screen to face her, his index finger moving across the shadows. "Those are my breasts," she wants to say. "Stop touching me without permission. And what do you mean we'd get 5 years? It's my cancer, not yours, and definitely not ours." She sees the anxiety in his blue eyes.
"I'm putting you down for a trial starting next month, Erin. We'll pencil a date in for surgery, just in case."
He turns to his keyboard and the movement reminds Erin of yesterday's yoga class. They were in Warrior II position, fingers outstretched, left leg bent and head turned to the side. Michelle announced she is going away. A friend will take the class for the next few weeks. "I've been offered a developmental opportunity in Lanzarote," she says. "You'll all benefit from it when I get back." One of the men whistles.
"It'll do you the world of good, Michelle,"
Sylvia, the woman from the Citizens Advice Bureau, says, sipping hibiscus tea afterwards in the kitchenette while the rest drink mini gin and tonics or low-alcohol beer. Sylvia says Michelle's husband is appalled at her giving her students alcohol and letting them drive afterwards, and Erin secretly agrees with him. She gets the bus home on yoga nights to make the most of what's on offer. Michelle leans towards Sylvia and Erin as if she wants only the two of them to hear. Her Glasgow vials are softened by the homely furnishings, the curtains at the windows and the carpet she insisted on beneath the yoga mats.
"I'm hoping he'll calm down when I'm away," she says.
"Has he hurt you again?" Sylvia's fingers reach out to touch Michelle's upper arm under the loose sleeve. Her arms are toned and lightly tanned, faint blotches of yellow and purple just visible, like broccoli florets past their prime. Sylvia's fingertips leave red marks on the skin.
"It's the stress of his job," she says. "We were playing, really, and then we weren't."
"You need to report him. It doesn't matter who he is."
"I will, if it happens again."
Michelle's smooth blonde head nods. Sylvia looks at Erin.
"Famous last words," she says on the way out.
In the clinic, Erin watches Alistair begin to type, assuming the conversation is over, the decision made. This is his style. He pronounces and the patient follows his advice. If she hadn't been thinking about Michelle's troubling comments since, she might not have given it a second thought. After all, he is an expert, and she is as no-nonsense as you can get. She's had to become deputy sister. But she's grown frustrated, pretending to be someone she isn't. Now, she is searching for herself.
"Whoa,"
Erin says. Alistair looks up, exasperation showing in his glance, quickly suppressed.
"What else do you need to know, Erin?" he says, "to make the right decision."
She looks away, trying to pull her thoughts together, her chair squeaking in the silence.
"What will it give me, this trial?" "There's a good possibility of 2 years extra, maybe more."
"Think about it.
Two more summers, soft breezes on Greek beaches. You like skiing, don't you? You can still hit the slopes this winter."
He smiles and she watches the tense lines around his eyes ease. She's smelling the eucalyptus, teasing the warm grains of Aegean sand between her toes, the sun behind her as she descends the black run towards happy hour in the hotel bar. He has learned this technique from Michelle, the importance of winning people over with his vision and keeping them close. Michelle has a new tribe in Belfast. There is a whole gang of them now, all wanting to be fitter, brighter versions of themselves. Some are asking questions about their purpose in life, whether they want to continue to be the sort of person they are right now. They come most days for Michelle's guidance and direction. She draws a bigger following than the vicar. They've signed up to her daily motivational soundbites. The one Aaron likes best is, "He who conquers himself is the mightiest warrior." She has it printed on cards and keeps them in her tunic pocket. She is thinking about this quote now as she weighs up the trial. Since starting the classes, she's followed Michelle's dietary advice, taking kefir and kimchi to improve gut health. Michelle runs a separate clinic for people who are sick, to give them hope, but not false hope, she says. She's organised a week to Alpe d'Huez in January. They've paid the hefty deposits already. "Let's not bring partners," Michelle says. Paying the extra for single rooms will give them the freedom to do late-night yoga sessions, drink together, and be fully open to transformation. "You can surprise your partner when you get home," she says, raising her eyebrows. "They'll not be able to keep up with you." Aaron looks at Alistair and wonders how much he knows about his wife's activities. Perhaps he tries to be in control at work because it's a different story at home. "And of those 2 years, how many weeks will I be ill?" The first time she went through it, the chemotherapy was hell. Every day stretched before her like a desert. She was desperately lonely, stuck in her flat. On good days, she emailed the ward sister for work to do at home. Then she found the online post from Michelle advertising her classes. "The drugs are improving all the time, Aaron, but you know I can't be definitive." "Come on, take a wild guess. I'm not sure I can go through that again." He shrugs. The irritation is back. "Then tell me about the alternative. What happens if I don't proceed?" She hates doing this to his once handsome rugby face. She can see why he isn't a fan of surgery. His nose was badly reset after the second break. For whatever reason, he didn't present in time. The result is a definite hump rather than the previous curve. "I give you 6 to 12 months. Breathing problems, ongoing pain, no way back." His mouth twists. His hands unlace and lie open on the table. "But for those months, I'll be free." She moves in the squeaky chair. His hands snake across the space between them.
"I guess," he says, "I'm asking you to choose hope. Gene therapy is showing positive results for breast cancer. In a few years, there will be new choices available for you."
"I don't see any hope from here. I'd rather live now and take my chances." She wants to say, "I'm going to die before my time, and you're asking me to put my faith in you. You're upset about your bald spot, but you've no idea what it's like to lose not just your hair, but your eyebrows, your eyelashes, your pubes, your identity. And we're cold all the time." She looks up and sees his confusion. He thought she would be compliant. He doesn't understand why she is spouting this nonsense, why she has changed. "You know I'm grateful to you for everything you've done so far. But I want to concentrate on the alternative therapies Michelle has identified."
"Michelle?"
he says, frowning. One thigh is jiggling like he finds it hard to keep still. "Yes, you're Michelle."
"It's your decision, Aaron," he says. He looks down at his hands. "But Michelle's gone."
Aaron smiles. "I know. She told us about the yoga trip.
Maybe I'll follow her out there and float away on an inflatable with the latest Marian Keys.
I mean, she's gone for good. With a woman. Some advice worker.
Erin stares at him, presses her hands onto his desk to steady herself. But she can't leave. There's a whole gang out there, waiting for her next message.
The room fills with a sharp, clean scent of lemon from the gin and tonic served under snow-covered pine trees.
I mean, not me, obviously. But she has our deposits for the skiing holiday.
She doesn't mention the dietary supplements she's already ordered and paid for. He snorts. She promised me she would stick to delivering exercise classes, not filling the minds of vulnerable people with mumbo-jumbo.
Erin leans in as she studies him and he pulls back sharply, his hand cupping his nose.
Sometimes I couldn't get out of her way fast enough, he says. He looks lost. If you change your mind about the trial, let me know in the next few days, just in case I need to go rescue her.
She thinks of his phrase, vulnerable people. She doesn't class herself as one of them, as one of Michelle's disciples, and neither does Dr. McAvoy.
How deluded they are.
Erin reaches into her tunic pocket, pulls out the cards with their motivational messages and drops them in the bin beside his desk.
I don't need a few days, she says. I choose life. I choose hope. And yoga. This time, I'm not going it alone.
Who Conquers Himself is the Mightiest Warrior was written by Bernie McQuillan and read by Kiefer Farron. The producer was Michael Shannon. It was a BBC Audio Northern Ireland production for BBC Radio 4.
BBC News at midnight. This is Alan Smith. Iran names the son of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei as supreme leader to succeed his father, who was killed in the first wave of Israeli and US attacks. Mojtaba Khamenei is described as hardline and ultra-conservative. President Trump says that without his approval, whoever takes over in Iran is not going to last long. A seventh member of the US military is killed in an Iranian attack. Crude oil prices have leapt above $100 a barrel for the first time in 4 years. The Prime Minister has spoken to Donald Trump after the President's public criticism of his stance on the war. In sport, Port Vale reached their first FA Cup quarter-final in 72 years, and India become the first cricket team to retain the men's 2020 World Cup title. Iran's next supreme leader will be Mojtaba Khamenei, son of the former head of the regime, Ali Khamenei, who was killed in an Israeli airstrike 9 days ago. Iran's armed forces, including the Revolutionary Guards, have pledged their loyalty. President Trump has warned that whoever leads Iran won't last long without his approval. As our correspondent Joe Inwood reports, the official announcement was made on Iranian state television shortly after midnight local time.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Khamenei Rahbar.
Breaking the news on Iranian state TV, the newsreader shouted, Khamenei is the leader. They referred not to Ali Khamenei, but to his son, Mojtaba, who will fill the vacancy created by US and Israeli airstrikes in the opening salvos of this war. The 56-year-old had been widely tipped as his father's successor and was chosen by the 88-person Assembly of...